And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Viewer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to This Is Not Iowa Week, So We Don't Make Cursed Podcasts, as your Golden Gophers return home for their final game before their second bye week, their sixth consecutive game, as it is Narrative Street, Mr. Luke Buehr. As the Golden Gophers take on Michigan State, why is it Narrative Street? Because Luke's favorite defensive coordinator in the history of the program, Joe Rossi, makes his return to the Huntington Bank Stadium sidelines. Before we get into that, how much do you think we enjoyed Sunday and the cursed episode that I will never, under any circumstances, ever promote?
That was a tough day. It was a sinking feeling, Ryan.
Golly.
So just so that people know, I edit and record all of the audio here. And I do it locally on my machine. We don't pay for a service, etc. We're all about keeping costs low. And what happened was I went to hit export and I was like, 26 minutes. That's wrong. And then in the recording software I had, I didn't have any way to actually go back any further. You know, I'm a fairly computer savvy individual. The temporary files had already overwritten with the new version that I had. So that was gone. I tried everything. And then we logged back on and recorded the same segment.
Oh my God. I cannot stress to people, when Luke told me we re-recorded defense that was about the only thing that we had, I cannot stress, Luke, what was the tone of my voice? I don't envy you.
The irony is that our relationship off the podcast is very different than our relationship on the podcast. We are very direct with one another, and you are very upset.
God, I was mad. But I ended up calming down the next day. We talked on Monday. We worked through it like a couple of grown men. And now here we are on Tuesday trying to get this out a little bit early, number one, so you can enjoy my dulcet tones. But number two, so hopefully I can get in a bleeping tree stand, because let me tell you, if you haven't been out there yet and you're a bow hunter, I know some of you may be waiting until in and around Halloween or maybe that first week in November.
Yeah.
The cell cams are popping, Luke, and I got my father out there in a tree stand. We got some shooters that are running around during daylight for the first time. So for those of you with a bow still in your hand, the temperatures are finally below normal. It's time to go sit in a tree, Luke.
Okay. I'm going to pass, but you do that.
Look, I try to have a hobby, because that's one of the things that it's just I don't understand why I made the decision as a of all the things I could do, I pick a hobby that I'm very passionate about, that I spend way too much money on, that also happens to coincide with my job. Now, many of you tell me I'm stupid. I'm well aware. But not the best decision I've ever made. What would you say?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the best decision. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's for me. I frankly, it doesn't matter for me if you enjoy this. I love it for you. And that's all that matters.
Well, do we have any Spotify comments to get into before we talk Michigan State Spartans?
I think my favorite Spotify comment was, thanks for deleting it. That was good. And this listener was relieved to not have to listen to a full-length episode of that game. We'll get him next year, he put in quotes. Yeah, I don't know. That was by far my favorite. Were there any others that you liked?
I'm going back an episode, because do you remember how Gopher Hockey commented on the Spotify comments?
Oh, yeah.
I called him Bob Motzkow.
Bob Motzkow, yeah.
Yeah, well, Bob Motzkow replied. He wanted to know if I had Coyle or PJ's number. He's trying to get some more NIL money for the Gopher Hockey program. Bob, you and I can connect here offline. Trevor says that the Johnny Raincloud glass half full and the Maroon Madness predictions can go away forever. Well, that's very kind of you, Trevor. You know what? Just for Trevor, Luke, I will not include them in today's preview episode. This is us taking feedback.
Yeah, we'll try it. Just wait until we get the feedback that's like, where did they go? But yeah, for sure. Can't please everyone. That's fine.
That's fine. Kyle wanted to make sure that I was going to say House of Horrors on the Iowa post-game podcast, and I did. Kyle, you got your mortgage payment back, and then the one maybe we can spend a little time on to start here is both Andrew and Luke. No, not you, Luke, but a different Luke. Coaching carousel talk, where I will remind people, and I talked about this today on Parent of Spare. Do you know what the number is for hypothetical money that has will be paid out already for coaching, head coaching buyouts
before
November?
Yeah, the buyouts is like $169 million, according to Front Office Sports, I think.
Yes, you saw the same tweet I did. $169 million. Now, the Brian Kelly one from LSU and the James Franklin one from Penn State, I don't believe they will be full buyouts, but we won't know that. Even if you take $30 million off those two combined, we're talking about $140 million that is going to be paid in buyouts. And it's one of the things that Luke and I do not necessarily see eye to eye on.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about this, but not on this episode.
Yeah, maybe we save it for the bye week. It's college football is not the real world. It is almost monopoly money. But the thing with these buyouts is no one's getting defaulted on, and these will be paid out. So of the ones that are open here so far, I want you to give me your top five job openings that are currently open.
What job I want? Can I do top three?
What do you think are the top five most desirable ones thus far?
Let me think. So remind me, it's LSU, Penn State,
Florida. Well, let me ask you right there, those bar none to me are the top three. Do you have an order of how you would place them?
Good question. I haven't given this a lot of thought, but I would probably go Penn State, Florida, LSU.
Oh, interesting. I would go Penn State. Well, here's the thing. I think Penn State and LSU you could put in the same tier. It's whatever flavor you want, as both have a significant amount of resources to support their head coaches. LSU, I believe there's more pressure, but they also have a better recruiting base. I'm almost talking myself into a LSU 1A and then a slight tier below Penn State 1B. And then I think it's a clear drop off to Florida at number three, because Florida is not – I don't think Florida is the destination that many people think of back in the Tim Tebow days.
I think that's fair. I think the reason that I put LSU last is they have, well, and Florida has done this too. They've gotten rid of coaches more quickly. I think their alignment of expectations and reality aren't really in line. So neither of those SEC schools are in good spots. The other thing is, like, I don't want either Florida or LSU because of just how much they've already, you know, committed to previous coaches, and, you know, looking at that balance sheet, like, that to me looks like a slippery slope, and we'll talk about this in more detail later. Like, I think they've set themselves up for a very hairy situation into the future. So that's part of why I don't want either of them. You know, Penn State, yes, they got rid of Franklin, but they've done this once in the last, 10 years. Their previous coach before that, Bill O'Brien, left on his own accord. They didn't owe him any money. And then, well, we all know what happened before that.
Well, that's where the LSU athletic director, for those who don't know, is the same person who signed Jimbo Fisher to that mega deal and then paid out, or is in the process of paying out that $90 million. And now he's on the hook for his somewhere north of $40 million for Brian Kelly at LSU. How does that man have a job is my question still.
Well, I think the reality for him is he probably eats difficult conversations for breakfast, up and down. So, yes, that is his reality.
I'd be curious what – I'll give you five more schools that to get into this bottom tier of which ones you think are more, I'll say, desirable. So you have Oklahoma State, Stanford. I think that's one that gets forgotten about because they're coaching on an interim. Arkansas, UCLA. I'll give you four there.
It was Stanford, Arkansas, UCLA, and what was the other one?
Oklahoma State.
I'm just going to give you the top one. I want Stanford or UCLA. Well,
first of all, you're such an intellectual man. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, I just like Stanford. Well, I like them because I've worked with them in the past, not the athletic department. But maybe I'm too fond of the years when Andrew Luck actually played. So, but yeah, I do think Stanford has an incredible alumni base, and if they could tap into that, if they could tap into that, I think that would be wonderful for them. I don't know. I'm really down on the SEC, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, it's
I don't love UCLA because of their financial situation either. Man, that's a lot of I don't like jobs.
There's a lot of I don't like jobs. I think, I don't know, where would you put Arkansas in this whole bit?
Interesting question. I don't know. I honestly don't know enough about Arkansas. Brett Bielema, who I hold in pretty high regard, struggled there.
The question with Arkansas is how much money will Tyson Foods and Walmart and their giant Fayetteville area boosters get, because we've seen what they're doing for Calipari. So the question is, for the next coach, will he have access to that amount of resources? Now, I don't know the answer to that. We're also still waiting to see if jobs open, such as Florida State, Wisconsin, Kentucky, if Matt Rhule takes Penn State. But that's where I kind of want to end this for now, is I will remind people, it has been over 50 years since a sitting Big Ten head coach has left for another Big Ten head coaching job. So a Big Ten head coach to taking another Big Ten head coaching job, it's been over 50 years since that has happened. Now, I think this is going to be the carousel that finally breaks that trend. What say you?
I have no reason to believe it wouldn't. I do think that the Big Ten is by far the best conference. That's the conference you want to be in for a number of different reasons. I think it's possible because people want to stay in the Big Ten.
All right. So you want to talk a little Michigan State here?
Yeah, we should talk a little bit about the injury situation. I know you had mentioned that on the breakdown that John Nestor left and looked like he was likely injured. We obviously know Darius Taylor as well. I know you don't have a lot of information, but maybe just familiarize the folks with people that we should be watching for in that 2-hour report.
Yeah. So for those who are wondering, by the way, because I didn't give the name of the coach who left, it was John Pont. Which I can't say I remember him. Back in 1972, he left Indiana for Northwestern. That's where he coached in 1973. So John Pont is the answer to the trivia question. Now, for the Gopher injury report, it is John Nestor who hobbled off the field afterwards. He got hurt in the second half of the game. And then he was among the last ones off the field because he was talking to his former Iowa teammates in Iowa City. And I was able to watch him hobble off. I don't know his status, but that's going to be one to watch, considering that this Michigan State receiving core is actually pretty dang good, especially on the outside. But the elephant in the room, too, is what is the status of Darius Taylor? And that's where the head coach, us media jackals, we never ask the tough questions. You always tell me that. We asked, what's the status of Darius Taylor? Fleck talked to the media after the game, looked us three in the eye, and said, still gathering medical information from our medical team. I'll update you guys throughout the week. I will tell people the media has access to PJ one time, and that is Monday. That is his press conference, and then he does radio with Grimmer and Guardsy on Tuesday, but he does not talk again to the local media. He only talks to them after the game, and then he talks to them on Mondays. So myself, I know many people somehow got... They weren't thrilled that I even asked the Darius Taylor question, because what do you think the answer was?
You'll know 2 hours before the game.
Which is funny. So I phrased the question as, PJ, you told us in Iowa City that you were going to update us as the week goes on and Darius Taylor. Is there an update? And he said, no. No, there is not. But thank you for the question. You'll find out 2 hours ahead of time. I'm as frustrated as all of you, but we have to ask the question, even though we know the answer, because if you don't ask the question, then everybody just gets mad anyway. I don't know what to think of what the prognosis is for Darius Taylor. I do believe it's a soft tissue injury, and that leads me to believe with a bye week on the horizon that Darius Taylor, for unfortunately yet another week in this 2025 season, will not be available for the Gopher running attack. I think that is a part of this thing that doesn't get talked about enough, is the amount of shuffling that has been going on at running back, the amount of shuffling among the different positions on the offensive line, to where, yeah, Greg Harbaugh deserves some blame for it. I just think if we're putting it in buckets, trying to design a running attack for, if you don't know if Darius Taylor is going to start and finish the game, then you brought in A.J. Turner in the offseason to, well, if Darius gets hurt, we can go to A.J. Turner. Unfortunately, he tears his knee against Cal, and he's not going to be available until next summer, next fall. And then you saw last week, I think Femme and Cam Davis might have had their most inconsistent games of the entire season. Combine that with an offensive line that lacks physical, consistent physicality, especially on the right side. And this is what you get, Luke, is you get a running game that, as we sit here going into a November 1st game, is dead last in the Big Ten in rushing yards per game against conference opponents. So those are the two big ones I'm watching. I'm hopeful that hopefully Mike Gerald can get back here in the near future. I know many of you are still holding out hope for Christian Driver. I don't see Christian Driver suiting up for the Golden Gophers at any point this year. Now, the number one question I also get is, what's going on with Christian Driver? No one will say it on the record, so I don't know what to tell all of you. But he does not warm up before home games. He does not travel. I just don't expect to see him. I don't know. Maybe Logan Loyal will be back this week, Minnesota slot receiver who missed last week's game. And then I'm also hopeful that Garrison Monroe can play here at some point after getting hurt on the bye week. I think it was last time. He got injured. What game was it? It was a home game. It was prior to Nebraska. It had to have been Rutgers, right? Rutgers,
yeah, I think it had to be Rutgers. Yeah,
I think it might have been Purdue. And then on the Michigan State side of things, it's unknown yet because we're recording this early in the week and I haven't heard back from my Michigan State beat writer. But I will talk about it as we go through this team for Michigan State. A part of why they are 0-5 in conference play is they are also incredibly banged up. And that's going to be one of the storylines that we talk about in this game, is this is Minnesota's sixth consecutive game. This is Michigan State's fifth consecutive game. And both teams are coming off arguably their most emotional rivalry games of the entire season, with the Gophers playing Iowa, and Michigan State took on Michigan last week. So this is a lot of teams left a lot of things on the field last week. Now, with both teams having a bye week after this, I am very curious to see how much both teams have left in the tank.
All right, Ryan, let's talk about when the Gophers are on offense. Again, going into this season, or going into this game, I should say, the Gophers are averaging 23.9 points per game, which ranks them 14th in the Big Ten. Michigan State is giving up 32.5 points per game, which ranks them 18th in the Big Ten. On total offense, the Gophers are averaging 314 yards of total offense, where Michigan State is giving up 380 yards of total offense. Rushing the ball, Minnesota is averaging 102 rushing yards per game, where Michigan State is giving up 149 yards rushing per game. And then passing, the Gophers are averaging 204 yards through the air, where Michigan State is giving up 230 yards. Minnesota on the season, even after three interceptions and a -3, is still a +2 in the turnover margin differential, where Michigan State on the season is a -3. They have 6 takeaways and 9 giveaways on the season. So, Ryan, for the Gophers to find success against Michigan State in this defense, what are they going to have to do?
I'd love for them to come out fast for the first time against an FBS opponent, because that's been one of the talking points here from the media this week, is in the 6 FBS games that the Gopher offense has had on their first drive, they have 3 points. 3 points on 6 opening drives. Now, I mean, that's a Greg Harbaugh issue without question, is why doesn't the offense come out and execute immediately? Now, you look at last week's game against Iowa. I know many people didn't listen to that podcast. Actually, we didn't even talk about the offense technically on that podcast. So I remember even the first play that Darius Taylor got his only handoff on. The tight ends screwed up, and they both didn't block one guy who made the tackle for 1 yard. If either of them, and it pains me to say this as a former college tight end, just hit the guy inside who is the unblocked defensive end, the first play, instead of 1 yard, would have been at least 11 yards. And if Darius can make one man miss, it might have been 51 yards. But that's been the thing for the Gopher offense, is the lack of execution consistently, the lack of physicality consistently. And that's where I'm so tired of talking about the Minnesota Moving Company up front. I'm sure their family members and friends and loved ones are also tired of me saying it, but they need to play better. And I asked Fleck on Monday, I phrased it in a way, I'm paraphrasing along the lines of, you've talked about previously how the best five offensive linemen are the ones playing. After rewatching the Iowa tape, do you still believe that? And do you know what he hit me with?
Yes.
What did you hit your wife with on your wedding day?
Are you asking me, or that's what he said to you?
What? I'm asking you, what did you tell your wife at the altar?
I do.
And he also hit me with an I do. Now, Fleck and I aren't married. So my follow-up question to him was, well, what did you think of your offensive line against Iowa? And he just told me that they executed poorly and that needs to be corrected. So I don't anticipate any changes on the offensive line in terms of personnel for yet another game, which that tells me, what does it tell me, Luke?
It tells me, it would tell you that I hear what you tell me, but I trust what you do.
I hear what you say and I trust what you do. And I think the crux of this thing that I'm going to probably stop talking about with the offensive line is, if this is the best five that they have, I don't know that it necessarily says things about the right guard and the right tackle, but about the guys behind them. How Khalid Tafai continues to be on a milk carton. How, for whatever the reason, the pride of Tracy, Minnesota, Tony Nelson can't get a shot. Or Brett Carroll. I don't really care particularly who your favorite backup offensive lineman is. They do see them in practice every day, and I do not. So the fact that they're not better than what we've seen on the right side of the offensive line, I think, is pretty damning. And the reality is, this is a Michigan State defense that is very banged up. This is a Michigan State defense that has played 21 different guys who have seen over 125 snaps defensively. I mean, that's five more than what the Gophers have on their defense. And I would argue Minnesota's dealt with some pretty significant injuries at times, especially in their secondary. That's how banged up Joe Rossi's defense has been, is they've just been trying to figure out how they can scrap it together. Now, the other thing you have to know about the numbers within that Rossi defense, where Luke said they're averaging a lot of points per game against, is they have been put in some of the worst spots because of their offense. Whether that's Aiden Childs fumbling the football, whether that's Aiden Childs committing an interception. But the other interesting part of it, and I'll just tease it now, is Michigan State loves to go for it on fourth down. The Gophers have gone for it four times all Big Ten season on fourth down, which is tied for the least amount in the Big Ten. Do you want to guess how many times Michigan State and Jonathan Smith have gone for it on fourth down in five Big Ten games?
You're saying they love it, so I'm going to go with 15 times.
17 times.
Oh, man, three times a game wasn't enough.
Brother, that's like 3.5 times per game. That's insanity. Well,
I did three times a game. That's crazy, yeah.
The thing is, they're not even really good at it. They're 8 of 17 on fourth down trying to go for it with their offense in Big Ten play. That means there's 9 times where they leave their defense high and dry on short fields. And that is a brutal thing. And that's one of the things where you look at game on paper and they are struggling with defensive field position. And what does that mean? They are 135th in college football in the starting field position for their defense. Another way to say that is the defense has not been done any favors by their special teams nor their offense.
Yeah.
So some of it is a Rossi issue. Some of it's an injury issue. Regardless of what it is, I really hope this is the week that the Gopher offense can get a short field. They have not been able to get one really at all at any point this season. I'll be the first to tell you the Gopher offense needs to execute better. But on their last 103 FBS drives, do you know how many of them have started within the opponent's 45-yard line?
Four.
Ding, ding, ding. Winner, winner, oh, chicken man. Dinner.
What a guess. What a pull. Hey,
they have started in an opponent's territory within the 45-yard line. So not even on like in field goal range yet. You're pretty close, but mm-hmm. the 45 and in four times in their last 103 offensive drives. That is 3.8% of drives. They cannot get a short field for the life of them. And I even think about last week against Iowa. They had 13 offensive drives and their best starting field position was, say, their own 32-yard line. They need some help, and I would love for this to be the game that Coy Parrish gives them some great field position in the return game, which if there was ever a game for them to do it, I'll talk about it when I talk special teams later. This might be the one, but it also comes down to the Gopher defense giving them something. Mm-hmm. This is not a good Michigan State run defense. They're second worst in the Big Ten. But the crux of Saturday, for those of you going to the 2:30 p.m. kick, it should be a lovely day, a little chilly on the chillier side, about 43 degrees for a high, is the Gopher offensive line's got to man up. They got to show up. They got to play physical. And if they don't, none of the things I can tell you really are going to happen, because I don't know what I'm going to see from a Gopher offensive line. I saw against Nebraska, them play their most physical game of the season, both in pass protection and in run blocking. Great. That meant PJ Fleck and Brian Callahan, the offensive line coach, they kept the same offensive line combo going into Iowa. And then I watched them get punched in the mouth. So do they respond and get off the mat? They have been better at home, but I just need to see them play physical. That's all I need, Luke.
All right. One thing that's stuck out to me, just kind of funny looking at CFB graphs, which was Parker Fleming's game preview. If you look at the Minnesota offense against the Michigan State defense, it's like everything that Michigan State does poorly defensively is what Minnesota kind of does poorly offensively. And it's just a funny dichotomy there. And I guess for me, I guess if you're the Gophers, you know, your strength is dropping back and throwing the ball. But knowing PJ, he's going to want to run it, knowing that that's a weakness for Michigan State.
I just think if Darius Taylor does not play, that they're going to lean back on the right arm of Drake Lindsey.
Well, that's what they've proven before, right?
I know Drake didn't play well last week. We would have spent a lot of time, and we did spend a lot of time saying that Drake Lindsey finally had his freshman game. A lot of freshman quarterbacks have had that in Kinnick Stadium in their lifetime, and that's a good Phil Parker defense. And when yes. Iowa was getting pressure with four, I don't know what you want anybody to do. So when now you're facing what we've seen historically from Joe Rossi is a very zone-heavy scheme, going back to his days at Minnesota. Derek has talked about it. Luke and I have talked about it, but we will reiterate it here one more time. That's where Drake Lindsey has been better because his pass catchers have also been better. Drake is able to recognize what the zone coverages are, and he knows how to find the window. And because it's zone, that also means his receivers, who last week against Iowa didn't force a single missed tackle and didn't come down with a single contested catch, don't have to meet press man coverage. Now, I would assume that Joe Rossi has watched the same amount of Minnesota tape as each and every one of you and said, maybe I play a little bit more man in this one and see if the Gophers can just beat us on the outside. I think that's very fair. But if this is going to be more than a 50% zone game from Joe Rossi, I expect to see a bounce back performance from Drake.
All right, let's catch a quick break, and then we will get back to talk about when the Gophers are on defense. Ryan, I always enjoy when we get a chance to interact with our listeners. And I heard recently after one of the events on Oak Street for you, you ran into Austin, who you've talked about for the Burns Insurance Agency before. Yeah. And goodness gracious, that man has a story, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he appreciated being on the podcast here as a loyal listener, and he appreciates everything we do, and we appreciate him for supporting those who support us. And I told the story here that my father at the Burns Insurance Agency saved him $700 compared to what he was previously paying. Well, he came up to me on Oak Street and he said, "Hey, Ryan, I want you to know I just talked to him. He's going to be saving me, get ready for this, $1,000 this year with switching over to a different insurance company within the Burge Insurance Agency." And that's the beauty of being an independent insurance agent, is every single year, the Burge Insurance Agency looks for the best rates and the best coverage for you, because all they want to do is give you the best service possible. Austin saved $1,000 just this past week. So if you are a Gopher fan in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, New York, Florida, or Utah, and you're looking to support those who support us, check them out today at insurancebyburns, all one word, .com, or email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Okay, Ryan, let's talk about when the Gophers are on defense. You know, again, the Gophers came off a very difficult game against Iowa that definitely impacted their statistics here. But on the season, Michigan State is averaging 26.3 points per game. Minnesota is averaging giving up 21.8 points per game. That ranks Michigan State 13th in the Big Ten and Minnesota 14th. In terms of total offense, Michigan State is averaging 332 yards of total offense, where Minnesota is giving up 292 yards. If you look at rushing, Michigan State is averaging 122 yards on the ground. Minnesota is averaging 102 yards, or sorry, 122 for Michigan State and 102 for Minnesota giving up. I think I actually misquoted when I did the offense. Minnesota is actually averaging 110 yards of total yards rushing.
But I think we have to put the disclaimer that you and I talked about earlier this week on anything Minnesota statistic related, is you have to just take it with a giant grain of salt.
Oh, because it's been such bipolar games.
They have been either, like, the stats don't indicate how they've been. The stats don't show you that they've been horrific on the road and they've been better at home. And they're 5-0 at home and they're 0-3 on the road and they've been outscored by 90 points. I wish we could just show, like, I don't know what is a great sample size, because we're heading into a November 1st game where, I don't know. I don't believe the stats really indicate the team that Minnesota has been on a weekly basis. And I think all of you would agree. I think the thing Luke and I had talked about offline was, I think for Minnesota's opponents, you can largely use these and it's a good indicator. But for a team like Minnesota and what they've been through 8 weeks,
it's not a very good indicator.
Not the greatest representation. Now, yeah, it's the data we have, but I think adding that disclaimer there is important.
Yeah, and Michigan State averages 210 yards passing, and Minnesota averages giving up 190 yards passing. Again, we went over the point differential. If you look at time of possession, they're both average about 30 minutes a game. Minnesota is maybe a hair over, almost 31 minutes a game, but both are right there. They seem to want to kind of play very similar styles, or end up playing similar styles as a result of the game script that they're on. But Ryan, what is the Gopher defense going to have to do to contain Aiden Chiles, who can run, and this Michigan State offense?
Well, they got to turn them over. And if they can't get turnovers this week, I don't know what to tell them, because this has been a Michigan State offense that has been having to play on the offensive. We talked about how they've already gone for 17 different fourth downs as an offense, and that's because they've been in so many negative game scripts. It's also been because they're struggling to find consistency as an offense. And this is a Gopher defense that needs to find ways to generate takeaways. We talked about how many times the offense has been put deep in their own territory or just not given advantageous field position. Well, part of why Minnesota's 0-3 on the road is the defense hasn't forced a takeaway on the road. They have zero defensive takeaways in 12 quarters on the road. Now, they've been better at home. I'm not one to tell you that they haven't been better at home. But this is where Aiden Chiles, the Michigan State quarterback, is just, he's got to be maddening. Like, I don't even know if that's a word. I'm sure it's not, and I'm sure somebody will leave a Spotify comment that my vernacular is horrific, but whatever. He is just everywhere. He's all over the place where he can make some throws that make you go, wow. He can make some scrambles that make you go, boy, I bet you this guy's got a bright future ahead of him. And I'm not saying that he doesn't, but he also makes some plays like having 7 fumbles on the season, including 5 in Big Ten play, including 1 in each one of his last 3 games. He will also take some horrific sacks that back them up. They're also not very good at running the ball, especially in 3rd and 4th and short. They are worse than the Gophers are on 4th down rushing. And I think without even looking at the stats, Luke, you know exactly what that means. So like it just starts with Aiden Childs. Like, they have playmakers on the outside in Nick Marsh, who is their leader in targets, receptions, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns. He's a big-bodied receiver. He only plays on the outside. So we'd be talking about Zaquan Bryan. We'd be talking about John Nestor. Hopefully Mike Gerald is back here very soon to relieve Jayonte McMillan of his safety playing corner duties on the outside. But getting to Aiden Childs is going to be the focal point, because this is an offensive line for Michigan State that's better than it was last year, but they're also not very good, especially if, stop me if you've heard this before, Luke, on the right side of the offensive line. Like, their right guard and right tackle, it's 58 and 72. They've been going through it. I mean, I think there's a lot of looking in the mirror in terms of where you can attack Michigan State. So that would be the hope that the tied for the Big Ten lead in sacks, Mr. Anthony Smith, can at least have a day against the right tackle, or even Carter Menz, who continues to flash. Horace, North Dakota, stand up. But 58 and 72 are where you want to attack them. They're just so inconsistent as an offense, because it's not just been the defense. It hasn't. It's been the offense either not converting on 4th downs, having a back-breaking turnover. And Aiden Childs just, he reminds me a lot of, I don't know, I hate making comparisons like this, but he's mobile the way that I would say Mark Gronkowski was, except he wants to use his arm a little bit more, and he's got a better arm than what Gronkowski does at this stage of his life. But he is the king of DGAF, and I'm not going to say it on the podcast. If you want to put it into the Google machine, DGAF, to find out what that acronym means. Like, Childs leads the entire Michigan State team, Luke, with 23 missed tackles. Like, he is someone, when he gets into space, is really good, and they will do like 3 or 4 designed runs for him per game. Mm-hmm. Plus, he will break the pocket, but it's all or nothing. It reminds me of Dylan Raiola in that aspect, where Raiola can make a couple of plays, like the left-handed pass or the flip over Joey Gerlach, where you're like, boy, look at that. But he will also take some horrific sacks, and he will take some bad turnovers or not take care of the football, which has led to 7 fumbles. The Michigan State offense overall has 9 fumbles. 9! So if this is a week where Danny Collins' defense cannot turn over Michigan State, this is a week where you need to be at least +2. You do. You need to be +2 in this game, and this is a Michigan State offense that has not been very disciplined. This needs to be one for, again, like I said, you got to get takeaways. You got to be able to give your offense something of field position, or just generate an explosive play here and there.
You know, this is, Parker now has Parker Fox, or sorry, not Parker Fox, Parker Fleming at CFB Graphs has some new data that I find pretty interesting. And it's really good to look at for this game. The design QB run percentage for Michigan State ranks 50th in the country at 18.1%, Ryan. But mm-hmm. their design QB run EPA is 20th. Take a gander where the Gophers QB designed EPA ranks in the country.
I say this with defense. The utmost peace and love to the Lindsay family if they're listening.
No. Defense, not offense. Defense. Oh,
excuse me. I actually think they've been pretty decent at containing the quarter. Well, I suppose Purdue's quarterback got loose a couple of times. They did a lot better against Raiola. I don't remember Ethan beating them with their legs too much. Gronkowski did some things. I'd say they're about middle of the pack. I'll say 65th.
119th in the country. So the other thing, when it comes to passing, the scram, and I don't know how Parker is able to calculate these, but yeah, it's not good for Minnesota when it comes to QB designed EPA. But when you look at the if you look at the scramble rate for Michigan State, they're also 45th in the country there when passing at 8.7%, and their scramble EPA is 17th in the country. Minnesota does better on the scramble rate and EPA. They are about mid in the country, 61st with scramble rate and 73rd with scramble rate EPA. But I do have to call out, you've said this from the very start of Aiden Chile's career. He does nip Lindsay on ADOT. He is 8.35 at 62 in the country, and Drake Lindsay is 8.3. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. They're both right there. It's a good ADOT game if you like some ADOT. That's again average depth of target.
Yeah, I think the thing that's going to be crucial for Danny Collins' defense is with the defensive line specifically. Men's, Jackson Howard, Anthony Smith, whoever it may be rushing on the outside, they can't get too deep. They can't get they can't be washed behind the quarterback. If they don't beat the offensive tackle on their rush, you have to condense the pocket on Chiles. So if he does try to break it, you still have inside leverage. And if he does break, and you can either go after him, and if you do, you're either going to draw a holding call and put on your best Emmy-winning performance, or you're actually going to push him further deep or further, you know, back in the pocket and try to get him down for a sack. But if you wash behind him, that doesn't do anything. I think we saw Jod Joyner do that quite a bit. So making sure that your rush lane integrity, like you did in the Nebraska game, not letting Raiola, as the game went on, escape outside the pocket, going to be absolutely massive for this one.
All right, should we get to the facts and the figures?
I suppose.
Okay, so for the facts and the figures, I was surprised when looking at the summary. I always forget that Minnesota and Michigan State just haven't played a ton through the years. Minnesota trails the all-time overall series 19-30. So this will be their 50th meeting all-time, Ryan. So Minnesota won the most recent meeting. That was the Jordan Newbin game. Minnesota won 27-12 in 2023.
I forgot. Oh. Yeah, when Jordan Newbin is RB5, when he had something stupid, like 38 carries for 200 yards.
Yeah,
wasn't
again,
it?
This is again. I got to remind you, this is an odd year, so this is the challenge that we have there. So it's kind of funny. PJ Fleck all time against Michigan State is 2-3 at Minnesota. He's 2-1. Obviously, some of that came when he was at. Western Michigan? Yes, that's where he was, Western Michigan. And Jonathan Smith has never coached against Minnesota. In television, you will have this game on BTN. It'll be a 2:30 kick on November 1st. And Guy Haberman will be the play-by-play, and Yogi Roth will be the analyst. We've had this crew already this year. I thought they did an all right job the time that we had them. This game will be at Huntington Bank Stadium again in Minnesota. Minnesota trails the all-time series in Minnesota at 12-13. So an opportunity to go 500 if the Gophers can win.
Can I bring you in the Wayback Time Machine, by the way?
Yeah, for sure. Go for it.
Do you remember the 2009 Halloween game?
I was there, my man. I was a student. I have a story for you for that game? Okay.
Well, fuzzy little man Peach, why don't you take me down memory lane?
All right, memory lane. So I'm a student. Let me tell you, I don't know what it's like for the students now, but the students when I was a student, they were very, very good at sneaking in alcohol. I never did, and I'm very truthful about that. Like I never did that. But they
such a good Boy Scout, Luke.
For sure. I was so into the football, and they definitely snuck in alcohol. That was the game that Duan Bennett caught the ball streaking down the sideline, I think. That was an awesome play. I think Dejon McKnight had a good game that game as well. I can't remember all the details.
Duan Bennett had two receptions for 121 yards and two touchdowns.
It was amazing. Adam Weber was awesome. Kirk Cousins played in that game. But here's the story. I don't think the game was particularly close. Can you remind me of the final score?
Luke, do you know what the game was? It was 42-34. The Gophers win, and they won because they scored 14 points in the third or in the fourth quarter compared to Michigan State's three.
Okay, yeah. Well, whatever. At the
well, you were you know, you weren't exactly sober, so the details.
No, I definitely was sober. I can't remember all the details, but this I will never, ever, ever forget. The Michigan State offensive lineman was down for a while. Like, he was clearly injured, and there was a number of students that got a very at least a semi-audible chant of "shoot him like a horse" started.
Oh my.
It was
like, what were you a part of?
I did not start that. It was not me.
A swashbuckler.
I might have been the guy when Ohio State visited when I was a student. They gave away free little footballs. They had an Ohio State trumpet player came into the student section, and I may have thrown it and hit him right in the face while he tried to play his trumpet in our section. That might have been me, but I was not anywhere near starting a chant "shoot him like a horse," but I did laugh. I did absolutely laugh because I don't know where they got that idea. But it he had been on the field for a long time. I will never forget that moment.
Oh my God, Luke, you're such a little troublemaker. Can I also ask you? I'm going to name a player for you. Actually, I'm going to give you his stat line and where he was from in this game.
Okay.
This player for the Gophers led them in receptions, eight receptions for 81 yards and two touchdowns. And he is, as I know it, the pride of Redwood Falls, Minnesota.
Oh, Redwood Falls. This is out by Wilmer. I should know this.
He went to Redwood Valley High School.
I don't know.
The answer we were looking for is yet another hyphenated name in the Gopher family, Nick Tauarnett.
Oh, Nick Tauarnett. Did he go there or did he go to Glencoe Silver Lake?
I'm looking at the Gopher Sports.
And it was Redwood Falls?
For him, and it says Redwood Valley. So if there's someone in that area that's very angry that I got it wrong, blame the University of Minnesota's own website.
Okay. Oh, interesting. I remember Duon Bennett in that game. And Adam Weber was amazing in that game.
Like, he completed 19 passes that went for 416 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah. it was incredible, and it was Halloween night if I remember correctly.
Yes, it certainly was.
There were lots of costumes, so then people had, and that's probably why the students were so much better at getting alcohol in that night, because this was pre alcohol in the stadium. Like, you couldn't get it. You obviously were too young to know. So
in 2009 I was 17.
So let's take a quick look at the weather for this game. I know this is your kind of weather, Ryan, but at least what I'm seeing here is that around kickoff, it should be about 41-ish degrees.
And a balmy 41, Mr. Luke Buehr.
There shouldn't be much rain, and it should be overcast, but there shouldn't also be very much wind. So I do think that this should be a pretty good football game. In terms of the conditions, make sure that you dress warmly. Things that I recommend would be a styrofoam board to stand on, like insulation board, I should say. That helps a lot. I have gotten it into Huntington Bank Stadium before very successfully, actually for this very game. And if you're sitting on a bench, I would definitely recommend sitting on that. It definitely makes a big difference for those of you that are headed to the game.
As someone who's going to be spending a lot of time outside, hopefully in the next 10 days, let me remind the listeners what my grandmother and my mother have told me for the duration of my 33 years of existence on this planet. There's no such thing as bad weather, Luke. There's only bad clothing.
All right. Okay. All right.
Some toe warmers, Luke. Some hand warmers. Yes. Some wool socks. We're all Minnesotans. This isn't like a Wisconsin game from the Jerry Kill era. There's not going to be a ton of wind. Yeah, it's going to be a little chilly. But you know what that means? Luke Buehr is going to join you out in the tailgate lots to take some Malort and with his maroon madness.
Yeah. All right. So finally, Michigan State comes into this game 3-5, 0-5 in the Big Ten. Minnesota is 5-3, 3-2. That gives us an opening spread, Ryan, of 5.5. This is what I see on ESPN Bet. Currently, it's 3.5 in favor of Minnesota with the over-under of 44.5. So what are your keys to the game for the Gophers to be able to find victory? Remember, we're not doing the Johnny Rain Clouds. We're not doing the, you know, we're ditching that. So you got to give it to us.
Changing our best for Trevor. Yeah. It's all about Trevor.
But this is, and I got to remind you, you can do whatever your keys to the game are, but when we get to the prediction, you can't do that.
I can't him and haw. You got it, Grandpa. So my key for the offense, and I've touched on it earlier, is the Minnesota Moving Company needs to show up. With Darius Taylor's status unknown, and if you're asking me to be a betting man, I would tell you I don't think he plays. And if that's going to be the case, you're already without A.J. Turner, so you're back on RB 3 and 4, which is Femi Ijeboy and Cam Davis. And it starts with the offensive line. There's two plays from the Iowa game offensively that I'm going to remember for the rest of the season and maybe beyond. One is a play, I think, from their third drive where the Gophers motion Pierce Walsh, who's a tight end, into the fullback position. They're running 6-on-6 in the box for Iowa. It's even. You have to be able to run it there. And by the time I think it was Femi Ijeboy gets the ball, the right guard is 3 yards into the backfield. The right tackle is 3 yards in the backfield. And Pierce Walsh is meeting a guy 3 yards into the backfield. I mean, you have to, like, there's no scheme in the world that can mitigate that. And it starts bleeping up front. Play physical. It's going to be finally Big Ten weather. You're facing a Michigan State team that hasn't won a game since September, and you're playing at home where you've played your best football. I want the running game to get going as much as anyone, because as Luke Buehr texts me in our daily texts every morning, RTB doesn't just stand for row the boat, it stands for run the ball. And they stink at running the football. And it's not just the scheme, it's everything. So if they're going to do this against a Joe Rossi defense that is giving up over 5 yards per carry in Big Ten play, and they have given up more rushing touchdowns than any team in the Big Ten in conference play, it has to be Brian Callahan's unit. And I think Nathan Roy and Greg Johnson and even Ashton Beers deserve credit, but it is the right side of the line. They all got to work together as one. There cannot be missed assignments. They can't be making – I mean, we're – 2/3 of the way through the season. They have to come out, fire off the ball. As my offensive line coach used to say, they got to play a little piss and vinegar. All right? They got to play physical. And if you can, and you can get a running game going, guess what? That's only going to help a young quarterback in Drake Lindsey. I'm sure no one in the Gopher football building wants to get back out on the field more than Drake Lindsey, who had the worst game of his quarterbacking career at any level. But if that's going to happen, you're going to keep him upright against Rossi's defense. And I'll mention this, by the way, Luke. It's going so poorly for Rossi in Michigan State that he moved down to the sidelines last week. That is the first time I can remember
Joe
Rossi calling a game from the sidelines. Now, Jonathan Smith, the Michigan State head coach, talked about it, saying that he didn't feel like the coaching was there in between series, and he wants Rossi to be able to handle that more. I mean, they are searching for any answers on that Michigan State defense, but it starts up front. If you want the offense to actually score on their opening drive, tell the guys up front to execute consistently. And if you need to come out and play physical. Now, I talked about it for the defense, is you got to get takeaways to give your offense some help. And if you want to look at the total yardage stuff, yeah, the Gopher defense is largely doing okay, if not slightly above average, but they're just not getting takeaways for their offense. And this is a Michigan State team that loves to gamble and an offense that loves to take risks. No team in the Big Ten has gone for it more on fourth down than Michigan State. They've gone for it 17 times in 5 Big Ten games. They've only converted 8 of those. You have to be able to show up in third down and fourth down in short situations in this game, and then get after Aiden Childs. Don't let him escape the pocket. You're going to give up a chunk play or two, but maybe this is the game where we see something. I've heard about it. I haven't yet seen it that I can remember this season. It's called a strip sack. I'd love to see one of those for a quarterback who fumbles it constantly. He can beat you with his legs, but you got to stop him on fourth down. And then you got to get multiple takeaways. And then finally, it's the 78%. And you have to be able to win the missed tackle battle, the turnover margin, where I will say this. Minnesota is +7 in the take give at home this season, which if you're looking for the biggest single reason why the Gophers are 5-0 at home. It's because they're +7 in the take give. Meanwhile, Michigan State during Big Ten play is -2. Those two things need to continue to trend that way. And if they do, I feel pretty decent about this one for Minnesota.
All right, so let's get to the predictions. I'm happy to go first so that you have some time to work through in your head the Johnny Rain Clouds. And I forget what the happy version is again.
I call it Maroon Madness, just for you.
All right, Maroon Madness. Again, a reminder that the current line is 3.5 in favor of Minnesota with the over-under of 44.5. In this game, I do think that Minnesota will find a way to be victorious. I think in the end, what they've shown us at home is that they are just a much better team, much more consistent. I do think that it probably ends up being pretty close, and PJ probably pulls the same thing he does in 2023, where he commits to run the ball. But I am very curious if they do put it on the arm of Drake Lindsey like they have previously. If Darius Taylor is out, and when he has been out, they have committed to him. But I just, knowing PJ and seeing the history, I expect them to run the ball. I could be wrong though. I will take Minnesota in the victory, 24-17.
Okay, I'm gonna give you some facts one more time before we get in. Fleck, with his next victory at the University of Minnesota, ties Glenn Mason for fourth in program history. So if this is the game that he gets, he will be tied with Glenn Mason for fourth all time with 64 career wins at Minnesota. I will also tell you that Michigan State's kicking situation, it's damn near like looking in a mirror, because the Spartans on field goals over 40 yards this year have only made one. They're 1 of 3. The Gophers, they're 1 of 4. So neither kicking situation is exactly at a strength for these teams. Minnesota and Michigan State are tied at the bottom of the Big Ten in long punt returns allowed with 3 over 30 yards. Plus, Michigan State's touchback percentage on these kickoffs is about 50%. This is a long-winded way of me saying, if there was ever a game for the boy from Esco to break the bleeping streak of a return touchdown, I wonder if this is the week. I do. I wonder. So here's where I'm at. I think the offense does need to get off to a faster start, but I do believe that it's a bounce back game for Drake Lindsey. I think he will show that he's the best player on the field. I think he's going to bounce back in a big way. And I think a strip sack in the fourth quarter of Aiden Childs by Horace, North Dakota's own Carter Menz, gives Minnesota the victory, 24-20. So I think we both have the Gophers covering, which is interesting. You have an under, and I believe I have an over.
I think you're right. It should be an interesting game regardless. You know, I know you love Narrative Street. We've got the Joe Rossi narrative. We've got the ADOT narrative. What other narratives are we missing?
I'm sure there's Brady Pretzlaff, who's a former Gopher commit who flipped to Michigan State, but he's out for the season, unfortunately, or else you'd see him make his return. I can't think of any other players that the Gophers took from Michigan State. So it's a 2:30 kick. It's a little bit chillier, but the wind's not going to be crazy. There's only so many of these home games left. I know many of you listening, the wind was taken out of your sails by the way the Gophers played in Iowa. I get it, but you only got two more opportunities left at home this season. Might as well get out there on Saturday. It should be a pretty decent day. Again, I'm not telling you it's going to be like it was earlier in the season, but this team needs you. I mean, any little support can help for a team playing in its sixth consecutive game versus one that's also playing in their fifth.
A reminder, Ryan, that for those of you that find yourself in wedding season, which this very much is wedding season, and you can't go to the game for some reason, or you just can't make it for some reason, I do have a solution for you. eVenture is a little entity that we started to be able to help season ticket holders find people that can use their tickets and create shared experiences while also being able to get money into Dinky Town Athletes. So go check out eVenture, eVENTSHURE.com. and we will be able to help you take your tickets and find them a home and make sure that people use them and get money to DTA. Otherwise, Ryan, they can go to Gopher Illustrated and check out your message board, and you've got a great thread there too.
So blessed and highly favored, Luke.
All right. So, again, thank you for listening. We appreciate you.
Are we not talking Big Ten games anymore? Oh, you're out of practice already?
I'm already out of practice. I'm trying to move on.
Sweet giblets and junipers, young man.
Yeah, I'm trying to move on with everything. I deleted the last podcast.
What are you, so. My high school girlfriend trying to tell me she wants to move on?
All right. Penn State at Ohio State. This is on Fox's Big Noon. The line is -20.5 in favor of Ohio State with the over under of 43.5.
I know we say this a couple weeks a year, and it sometimes ends up playing out this way, sometimes it doesn't. But this on paper is not a great Big Ten slate. You've got some higher profile teams on byes, but you've also got games like this one where at the beginning of the season, this looked like an awesome one. And now you have a Penn State team that's 0-4 against an Ohio State team that looks like they're going to be in the national title game. I don't know that there's really anything to say other than can Julian Sain continue to put himself in the Heisman discussion?
Yeah,
I know he's certainly on my watch list.
All right. Rutgers goes to Memorial Stadium in Champaign, Illinois to take on the Illinois Fighting Illini. This is at 11 a.m. on NBC. Illini, 12.5-point favorites with a 62.5 over-under.
You doubted Rob Smith. You continue to doubt Rob Smith. All he does is make game-changing turnovers.
He doesn't,
like he did against Purdue.
He doesn't fare well in this stadium. Just honestly,
that's so funny. That's perfect, Luke. Yeah, that's your narrative street. This is the place that Rob Smith ultimately ended up getting fired from because of the Gopher defense's performance back in 2018.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, a house of horrors, some would say, for Rob Smith.
What if he gets canned after this game again?
I don't think he'll ever step foot in Champaign, Illinois, no matter how much money you try to pay him to coordinate your defense.
All right, number two, Indiana travels to Maryland, 2:30 kick on CBS. Indiana is a 21.5-point favorite with the over-under of 50.5, and for some reason, that doesn't feel like enough.
Do you have a preference in Ohio State and Indiana 1 and 2?
Well, I'm looking forward to hoping to see them play in the Big Ten championship. I think, ultimately, I like Ohio State because I think their defense is just really good. Indiana's defense is good too. Like, don't get me wrong, but I just think that I don't think there's anybody as good as Ohio State's defense right now.
All right. Well, you just want to give Kurt Cignetti some more bulletin board material. I'm sure
playing through their practice facility will be my voice saying that something to that extent. I'm sure he'll find it. So,
is this the last Locks in November that we see? Do you think if Maryland, who now starts, I mean, they get Rutgers this weekend. I mean, they have Indiana, Rutgers, Illinois, Michigan, Michigan State. They're currently 4-3. If they do not make a bowl game, does Mike Locksley come back?
Just given the nuclear winter that's existing in the coaching carousel, I'm going to say yes.
All right. Let's keep moving.
All right. Purdue travels to Ann Arbor to take on Michigan, at number 21 Michigan at 6 p.m. on BTN. Michigan is a 20.5-point favorite with the over-under of 49.5, and I feel like in some ways that's disrespectful to Purdue.
I mean, I don't know what Purdue team's going to show up. Is that going to be the one at the mistake by the lake where they get shut out by Northwestern? Is it going to be the one last week that found ways to lose once again to a Rutgers team that they had exactly where they wanted them and then, I would say, fumbled it away, but they throw the batted pass back to the quarterback who then fumbles it away? I mean, I think Michigan runs for over 200 yards in this one, and it's just a gross, say, 30-10 game.
All right. 23 USC goes to Lincoln to take on Nebraska for a 6:30 kick on, this is Big Turd Saturday. Okay.
I love that.
I'm going to call it Big Turd Saturday, or this is the Big Turd game of the week, whatever we want to go with. USC, 6.5-point favorites, over under 59.5.
Who actually steps up to when I what I would call a big game. A USC team that has struggled to take the next step, or a Nebraska team that has struggled to take the next step. And it's on national television. I have no idea what to expect in this game. Do you?
I have no clue.
I almost think I'm going to take Nebraska at home, but I also am like, I mean, USC and their athletes and Mekhi Lemon and the whole bit. I just like both teams have played pillow fights in these national spot games where it's like, okay, if they win this game, then they can take off. Well, one, somebody has to win this game. Allegedly, somebody does. And I know USC is about a touchdown favorite, like you said. I don't know. Feeling big red here.
All right. One final story for you. I just got a text from my wife. She's with our kids, and my son likes to watch highlights. And the youngest one, she says, your son refuses to watch highlights for the Iowa game. He cannot reliably count to 20, but he will not watch the Gophers lose to Iowa again.
I think many fans can resonate with your son.
Yes, absolutely. Well, again, want to thank you guys for listening. We look forward to breaking down the Michigan State game, and we'll bring you the entire podcast next time.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.